Pasuk Aleph in Bamidbar. Here's how we're starting off. Yidaber Hashem Moshe Bamidbar Sinai Ba'ol Moed Ba'ach L'Chodesh Hasheni B'Shan Hashenis L'Tzeitz Meretz Mitzrayim Lamor. So Hashem spoke to Moshe in Midbar Sinai by the Ba'ol Moed on the first of the second month in the second year after they left Mitzrayim, saying the following. This is Rosh Chodesh, year of year number two. This is what we're dealing with over here. So the Ba'al HaTorah points out that at the end of Chukosai, that's the end of Sefer Vayikra, the words Eilech HaMitzvos are written. These are the mitzvos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them to do. And then the parsha starts off by Midbar Sinai to hint the idea that if a person doesn't make himself like a desert, he'll never be able to learn Torah and do mitzvos. That's the wording of the Ba'al HaTorah. In order to do Torah, to learn Torah and to do mitzvos, you have to make yourself like a midbar. Now what does it mean to make yourself like a midbar? The Matnos Kuhuna understands this to mean a person has to be humble and simple and willing to learn from everyone. A midbar means you have no ego, not willing to say that I am greater than this or that or the other. You're just willing to become, in order to become a Talmid Chacham, you have to be willing to learn from every single person. If he feels the need to speak and give his own chidushin and can't just sit there and listen, he's not a midbar. He is not a midbar. That's the only way to be able to learn. The Tal Leoros quotes the Ran in the Nedarim Daf Lamed that says regarding kiddushin, when you marry a woman, once a woman agrees to marry a man, now I'm just going to say that, I'm going to point this out, this is parenthetical in the beginning. I know that some people here that are very, very into that woman's rights, etc., are going to be upset about this Ran. And I'm just going to preface you by saying, I'm not going to care about this for right now. I'm not running for president, okay? I'm going to Donald Trump it through this board, and you're going to be perfectly fine with it, right? And if you have an issue, or your wife has an issue later on, then don't say it ever again. This is for us, right? And you won't be able to tell anybody else, and that's okay, because it's a guy's party, okay? With our woman here, then we won't say this for her. We'll skip over this one, but until then, it's good. Will it go into the safer? I don't know. But regardless, he says, regarding Kedushin, once a woman says, I am willing to marry you, she is essentially nevatel dato. Her das is gone. She's agreeing to be hefker. Her own thoughts are hefker to her husband's, and her husband can pick her up, so to speak, and bring her into his possession. Okay, now you see why I'm saying that this is a little bit controversial. It's not. This is the Ran. Okay, this is Pshat. Now, in that sense, we can understand that the only way a person can properly learn Torah is to do the same, to be married to it as a woman. You lose your own desires and wants and agree to do whatever the Torah wants you to do, so to speak, in that way. Of course, that's not abusive. Okay, in that way, that's the Pshat behind that idea, and that's how the Ran understands it. It is a tremendous Pshat in how to be able to learn Torah, what it means to be hefker, to say to yourself, it doesn't matter. What I want doesn't matter anymore. Then all of a sudden you're able to learn. Another way to look at it, so Rav Sternbach and his Sefer Tam Vidas, who says a person should act as if he lives in a desert away from all the bad chevras so he doesn't learn from them and follow in their ways. Even if the chevra is made up of good people, sometimes people need a little bit of hisbodidus. You know what hisbodidus is? Staying on your own. Well, I don't mean Rav Nachman, type hisbodidus, or the fake Rav Nachman type of hisbodidus. You know what I'm saying? I mean Rav Nachman is hisbodidus. The real stuff, to become yourself, to become even greater, that's what you need next up shot. Sometimes you gotta go to the midbore. You gotta be a midbore once in a while. Go out on your own and see, am I being affected by my chevra, or am I affecting my chevra? You like that? With the E effect, or the A effect to others? That's the idea behind it. Rav Schwab says that whenever someone has a huge ego, this is Rav Schwab, that ego blocks him from his relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Anivahu says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if a guy is an ego, a guy is gaiva, Anivahu cannot be in the same place. We can't live together. When he makes himself like a midbar, like hefker, he allows the wall between him and Hashem to be taken down. He's zocheh to a mount of chokmah, to an understanding of Torah that he never had before. That's what he's able to do. The key, here is the key, to be able to learn Torah is to not consider yourself a better person because of it. You might be a better person, but not to say, you know what? I'm a really good person. You know why? Because I learned Torah. Not to go around telling other people. That's the shot behind it. And that's the idea. How can a person tell if he's learning Torah the right way? How does he know that it's happening over? Here's the shot. Somebody quotes you and doesn't quote you. He said over a board that you said. It's your board. It's something that you made up. It's on yours. And this guy is quoting it as if it's his own. When that happens, and you don't care, and you're sitting there saying, it doesn't matter, I don't care about that, whatever, you're allowing the ego to be lowered, you're allowing the Torah to be hefker, so to speak, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will let more chokmah come from your mouth. You'll be quoted by many other people. My Rosh Shiva, Rabbi Lerfield, one time, somebody came over to his house and told him over a chiddush that he had heard in a shir at the Mir Yeshiva. Said, this is what my Rabbi said, and he said it over. And my Rabbi Lerfield laughed. I said, what are you laughing about? He said, that's mine. That's my Dvar Torah. That's Ma'is Kiddush. And he showed him. He brought out his sefer, the Bina Siniel, and brought it out and he showed him. This is exactly my Kiddush. I wrote it down right over here. And this rabbi said it, but he didn't quote Rebbe Lehrfeld. Right? He didn't quote it. So the person said, oy vey, maybe I should tell the rabbi. And Rebbe Lehrfeld said, what's the difference? It doesn't make that much of a difference. So now I'm Mir Torah now. That's what he ended up looking at it. That's the idea, says Rosh Chodesh. That's the point where you all of a sudden become like a midbar, your hefker, where your Torah becomes, whoever wants to take it, go ahead and take it. I think that's the idea. Now, let's go into another idea. I think we sometimes forget what it was like living in the Midbar for 40 years with Bnei Yisrael. We kind of picture this idyllic setting with like everybody's happy and you're just sitting, everybody's living outside of their houses and they're sitting on their lawn chairs, you know, chilling out with their neighbors, having a beer or two, you know, having a great time with everyone else for 40 years, and all they're doing during the day is learning a little bit. They went to Starbucks in the morning and then they go and they sit down in their comfortable, you know, lawn chairs, and they're all sitting there and Moshe Rabbeinu is darshaning and they're just like, oh, that's a good shot, Moshe. And we think of it as like this perfect setting and everything's over there. Just remember this over here. They were never able to save food from one day to the next. So it could very well be that tomorrow you're going to starve to death. You're in the middle of a desert with no water whatsoever, except for water that comes from a rock. That's all you have. There's no other water that's there. I would assume that the water was not the cleanest quality. Now I realize we think of it as, well, it's miracle water. It's obviously got to be clean and clear water, right? How do you know that it wasn't clean? It was absolutely... And maybe it was dirty. The mun was on a little shikvas towel. It had a little thing of towel on the bottom and a towel on the top. Guys, I don't know if you've ever seen a thing of dew that's on sand and then a little piece of food on top of it. I'm pretty sure they were wiping off sand off that food all day long. And yet still, nonetheless, and remember, they couldn't save. And they had literally no other place to get food for them and their children. That's the idea behind it. Their clothes, their shoes, everything else they had just lasted. They never had anything new. They never had anything else that was supposed to be. They had nothing else to wear just in case. If a kid, and I know this never happens, but if a kid soils his pants, well, kid, good luck. It'll clean itself by morning. You've got nothing else. What are you going to give him? There's nothing else there. There was no work to do, which sometimes makes people feel inadequate. They were all required to learn all day. And can you imagine if you didn't have the head, so to speak, for learning? And you had to sit there and learn all day long without any breaks. There's no break to go to the bathroom. You didn't have to go to the bathroom with the mun. So there was no excuse to get up for a second to go to the bathroom and to come back afterward, which I know everybody needs. There's not even an excuse to go get a drink of water. There's no drinking fountains. There's nothing. It's a little rock with water coming out of it, and that's all you got. They were living in cramped tents. I know you're thinking like, oh man, a tent is probably you. They were living in a little tent. That's all they were doing. Tiny little tents that they set up with sand beneath their feet. That's how they were living the entire time. This was not the easiest existence. And yet, nonetheless, how many times did they complain during the 40 years that they were in the Midbar? How many times do you see them say anything? Now, granted, the Misonim, the Parshas Baloscha, you see them complain. Maybe after they came from Kriyas Yam to the very, very beginning. But for 40 years, these people understood that this is their existence in order to learn Torah. They accepted upon themselves because they knew this is what they were supposed to do. That's the craziest thing. Maybe we can understand the message in a different way. The Torah was given to them with three things they could use to perfect themselves. The idea is that they were going to have everything they needed as long as they picture themselves as if they're in the Midbar. They look at themselves and say, just like in the Midbar we survived, we're going to be able to do this ourselves. Maybe that's the concept of what they were trying to do over here. Rabbi Victor Miller says, there has never been another time in a certain way. That's the idea behind it, what we have to do with us now. And that idea, Rav Victor Miller says, there's been no other time in our history where a Kadosh Baruch Hu has been so manifest to our nation for so long a period of time. There's never been anything like this. There was never such a situation where we had all the nation together in one place. We have never had a leader like Moshe Rabbeinu. We have never had this amount of time that we were isolated from the other nations. We've never had an amount of time where we got to learn. We got to sit and learn. Yeah, there were crises. That's good, right? Nice word. And disasters that were out there. But they were phantoms. They were phantom crises, phantom disasters to test our endurance and to see, are we going to handle it or not? Every single morning after you finish your davening, there is something at the end of your sitter that's called the Sheish Zechiris. In a regular art scroll sitter, even the Chinuch sitter, you're going to see it at the very, very end that are called the Sheish Zechiros. There are six remembrances, I guess you can call it, you're supposed to every morning. It's right before the Animamins, after the Yom. You remember Zechir Yitzias Mitzrayim, you remember what happened in Har Sinai, you remember Amalek is terrible, you remember what happened by the Egel Azov, you remember Miriam, you remember Shabbos. There are four others that are added on by the Gro. four others. One of them is Yerushalayim. One of them is what Bilam and Balak did to Klal Yisrael. Another one is referring to how Hashem gives us the koach to do everything we need to do. And number 10, and the reason why I brought this up in the first place, number 10 is that we're supposed to remember at all times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested us in the Midbar, and we made it. We did it. We were able to do it. Says we're Victor Miller. We were the people that were able to go. This formed us into the people that we are today. We survived that. We can survive this. So when the air conditioning breaks down, or when there's not enough selling for everyone, or when, you know, the chair is just, you get that chair that just doesn't have enough cushioning, you survive. You survive. And instead of finding yet another reason to complain, which I know we're really, really good at, every Jew is tremendous in complaining, you use it in a way that works out well for you. Something that will work for you, something's going to be there. Now, this is the shot over here. There's another version of this Medrash that's quoted by the Medrash Rabbah. And that's also quoted by the Rush itself. With three Devarim, the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael. The Torah was given with fire, with water, and with the desert. In the desert itself. Each one comes with a pasuk, and that's there. And the lesson is that just like these three things are ownerless and hefker, water and fire, I know water sometimes is owned, but water, fire, and the Midbar are hefker, so to everything, anyone can pick these up and grab it with it, so too when it comes to Torah. Anyone can grab Torah, take it for themselves, and keep it for themselves. Rabbeinu Bachaya uses the word chinam. Chinam, they're free. Each one of them are free. They're free for you to be able to come and take it. I don't know what the difference is between them, but there is an interesting difference, nuance, between the fact that it's free versus the fact that it's hefker. One of the two that's out there, Schnurmbach says, this is the reason why the Shekhinah took a precedence in the Midbar, to show you that anyone who wants to be connected to the Torah can do so. It's hefker for whoever wants. If somebody wants to come and grab it, it's theirs. It's not in Israeli Torah. It's not in Egyptian Torah. It's not a European Torah. It's an ownerless hefker Torah for anybody that wants to come and grab it, come and take it from us. That's really for Parnassah, because the Machzik B'Torah, I think that's what you're referring to. The Machzikim usually refer to the people that are holding up the Torah, so to speak. Usually that's how they reference it. But yes, the concept is still there, that the people that are Machzik, yeah. What? Not necessarily. Although you're right that obviously the Jews are the one that took advantage of the situation, that doesn't mean that others can't. A non-Jew can still take it. Can still take it for himself if he wants to. He can still grab it.
That is a non-Jew, though.
Yeah, for sure.
A non-Jew has one power.
Oh yeah, but he can do it. We're not. Again, whether he's doing it rightly or not, he can still do it. And not only that, maybe that'll be Megayrim, Myraya, Shabbos Lamed Aleph with Hillel. Check out the Marsha over there. It's an amazing Marsha. But that's Myraya for that. The Chovas Lavavos in Shara Bechina. And if you haven't done Shara Bechina in the Chovas Lavavos, that's because you're normal. It's very hard to do Shara Bechina. It's a very, very, very difficult chapter. So yes, you're happy. It says that anything that's necessary for one's health or your existence is given to us for free. Now consider the following. Air is in abundance in this world. Why is air in abundance in this world? Oxygen, I should say. Because you can't live without oxygen. Water, although yes, it's a resource that is unfortunately becoming depleted, but water has a tremendous amount of water in the world. And the fact is, if we came up with some desalination plant that was viable monetarily, then we'd have more water than we know what to do with. Water is all over the place, and that's the idea. And land itself is obviously, there's a tremendous amount of land that is able to be used to go through. The things that we need the most are around us at all times, and that's the concept. Just like fire, I guess you can say that that's oxygen, although I don't know exactly how that connects. Water and land is all over the place. So too the Torah is all over the place for those who want to grab it. It's absolutely everywhere and necessary for the world to continue to exist in the same way. The Bishop Sofer says the same type of thing. The only way to get through Gullus is by doing that, but that's one thing over there. Now, there's an oral Yaakov written by the Magen Midubno. Perhaps you've heard of the Magen Midubno. If you haven't, the Dubno Magen is a tremendous, tremendous Tamakacha. The Yalkut Lekach Tov quotes this in the following. He says, every single person is created with midos that are literally polar opposites of one another. So for example, we have an ego, and we also have humility. These are two midos that are exact opposites, and you have a little bit of an ego and a little bit of humility all at once. hearts. Some people are merciful and cruel. They can be merciful to some people and cruel to others at the exact same time. We can love people and hate people at the exact same time. A wise man knows how to differentiate, take one extreme from the other, and make some type of in-between that allows us to do everything together. Here's the pshat behind it. A person's taivas can be compared to fire. Fire burning within him to do something, while his ability to hold back and not do it is like water. To flow downward and say, no, I'm not going to do it whatsoever. That's the ability to be mevatel himself and take himself down. David HaMelech said, libi chalal bekirbi, as if I'm hollow inside. He can knock down the fire that's burning. He can cool it down by having water on top of it. But how much better would it be, says the Lech HaTov, if you were a midbor and you don't even allow your taivas to come to the forefront in the first place. Don't even allow those taivas to come up. That's the best. The best way to be able to go out of it. You have a taiva, use water to knock it down. But the best thing to do is the midbor itself. To be a midbor in that way. Niksav Sofer says similarly, there are three midos that a person should have. Water is an anivus. You want to become an anav, then you can be a talmid chacham. But become an anav and work in your anivus, and then you go a talmid chacham. Torah is compared to fire. And allow yourself to make and say, like, I want to be able to learn. That bren, that desire, that drive to learn is the only thing that gets people to do something. So it's the fire is the real type of to be able to grow. And then midbor is yistapik b'muat. To be okay with just what you have. As the line says, pas b'melech tochal. To eat bread with salt, umayim b'mishra tishta. To drink just the amount of water. That's how a person is going to be able to learn Torah, by taking those three things and using it for itself. And then comes the Shem Yishmol. I don't know if you've heard of the Shem Yishmol before. If you haven't read the Sefer Shem Yishmol, it's a Sefer that's beyond. We're talking about a Hasidic Rebbe that lived about 150 years ago. He wrote a seven-volume set, depends on how you lay. I think it's 7 or 8 volumes altogether. But tremendous Chochmah inside there. If you've done the Nesivos Shalom, Nesivos Shalom is the son of the Shem Yishmol. Tremendous Sefer, absolutely tremendous Sefer. So look at this in how he learns it. He says something like this. He says again, fire is the drive to succeed. Water stands for your desire that you should love it more than any desire in the world. So a little bit different than how we learned the fire up above. That the midbor, don't be connected to anything that's unnecessary in this world. Don't take more than what's needed in order to get through. A desert is not an end. How do you use a desert? Use a desert to get to the other side. It's a means to the end. You have to go through in order to get somewhere. So the desert represents using this world in the proper way in order to get yourself to Olam Haba. So in that way, maybe you have a way of connecting yourself getting there. And then he says the following. It's possible the fire is our nefesh. The water is our seichel, and the midbor is our bodies getting ready for the next level. If we do that, we have our nefesh, our seichel, and our bodies used correctly, then all of a sudden we can find ourselves close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept behind it. But then he goes a little bit further. Let's give an introduction. You know, we all know Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are three big midos. We know that Avram represents the midah of Chesed Ava, and Yitzchak is Gevura, Midas Adin, and Yaakov is, and it's a hard one, Tiferes, love, beauty, etc. Right? That's the combination of them all. Rachamim, as they call it. Rachamim, as they do. Right? Now listen. You have three meals on Shabbos. Three meals. Friday night is Keneged Yitzchak Avinu. Midas Adin and Gevura. There's a Gevura behind it. But at the same time, notice, Friday night is the time when we have Oneg Shabbos. We sing a lot during Kabbalah Shabbos. Most of us with souls. Now, it's a time when people get their strength together. They have a good meal, and then they go to sleep. They bring themselves together to get around. That's Friday night. That's Yitzchak Avinu. It's a gevura in a way, but gevura in a good way. Using your gevura in a positive fashion. Shabbos morning is Avram Avinu. The boker, obviously, because that's Avram Avinu's tefillah, but notice that, I mean, Mariv is not Yitzchak Avinu's tefillah. It's a time of chesed, a time when you're giving to others by inviting for meals. Sometimes it's hard during the night, but that's the concept. The calmness of Shabbos morning is Avram Avinu, and then Yaakov Avinu is that Shlemus, the Ratzon Hashem taking over, the end of the day, so to speak, of what Mincha stands for, and how it goes at the end of the day. That's the kind of where Yaakov goes. So again, you got Yitzchak Friday night, Avram Shabbos morning, and then we get Yaakov Avinu for Shalosh Shudis, for Mincha itself, how it for that time. Now here's the pshat. He says, Yishuv Adas, a calm demeanor, is water. Water flows quietly, but it goes through and it does what it needs to do. That's the idea of water. fire. The fire is sitting there and wanting to do something more and strong, getting up there and being screaming and doing whatever you can possibly do. That's the fire itself. And the Midbar stands for willing to give up a life of Simcha in order to do what you need to do in your Avodas Hashem. These are the three Suttas and these are the three Midos of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram Avinu is that concept of Yishuv Adas and water, Shabbos morning. Yitzchak Avinu is the fire, the Gevura, and that's Friday night. The Gevura that we have, the ability to be strong and to want more and to strive for more. And the Midbar stands for Yaakov, where everything's done. Now we find ourselves getting closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have that He's spoted us to get ourselves there. That's the concept of the Shem Yishmol there. Yeah, what's up?
How do we deal with Shabbos where we start at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and then by Friday night, our fire's not there anymore after the meal?
Take a nappy.
And then get up 1 a.m. and do another.
Yeah, why not? I don't mean music. The point is not to have the onek. It's not about the onek. It's not about the onek. It's about trying to find your strength. And when Shabbos comes in, you have to find your strength. I know it's hard. Stand up for Kabbalah Shabbos if you know you're going to fall asleep if you're in the middle of Lech HaDodi. Stand up. Stand up and try to sing along. If you fall asleep standing up, shkoyach to you. I've always tried to do it. I've never been able to do it. Try to see. You get up and you stand and you walk around. I'm not asking you to go all, again, Rav Nachman on me, right? And go a nanach and start dancing around the room. That's not what I'm asking. Find the fire within you for that Friday night. But again, that's the idea about it. That's what he's trying to say over here. Okay, there's a tremendous Rebbe Yashiv over here, which we might come back to over here. But first, let's go to Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro has a famous work. I hope you've heard this before. It's in Likutei Pshatim every other year. Okay? So if you haven't heard it, likely it's going to be in this year because it wasn't in last year. So I'm telling you right now, it is a tremendous word, tremendous idea. Here's the Kiddush. Ever since we became a nation, we have time and again given up our lives for the Torah and everything that our religion stands for. Even if it makes sense to do what the other nations are doing, many, many Jews have always said, no way, I would never do that. That's not what I would do. That's what Jews have been able to do. Where does that power come from? Where do we have that power of mysterious nefesh to not give up our religion, to not give up what we stand for? Where does that power come from? It stems from our avos, from all of our fathers, not just our forefathers, but all of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents all the way through that have done it for years. And it starts with Avram Avinu. It starts with Avram Avinu. What happened to Avram Avinu in the beginning of his life? Right? When he was just finding out Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Nimrod argued with him, took him, and threw him into Kivshan Aish, into the fire. And Avram Avinu survived. But maybe you'll say, you know what? That was an individual like Avram Avinu. The nation as a whole can't do that. One person can do it. But the nation as a whole aren't able to do such a thing. Then came when the Jews left Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf. And although Nachshon ben Aminadav started it, and Shevet ben Yamin started by jumping in, all of the Jews went into a precarious situation. A Yamsu with sea walls on the side that could come down at any time, and it did, on the Mitzrayim. And they were willing to be Moser Nefesh by jumping into the sea, especially Nachshon and Shevet ben Yamin. But everyone, by walking into the sea and going in and doing it, they were willing to be Moser Nefesh to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to do. Moshe Rabbeinu says, travel, they traveled, and they went inside. Now granted, that's a one-time thing. Maybe you'll say, Avram Avinu was an individual. The Yom Suf was a one-time thing. Sure, you could do it one time. How do we know that you could do it over and over and over again? Because the Jews then went into the Midbar and lived as a nation in the desert with all the hardships that we mentioned beforehand for 40 years. They survived for 40 years with an unbelievably small amount of complaining, considering we know Jews and we know how they act. An unbelievable small amount. There's no bigger mysterious nefesh than that, than living in the tent, living without any food for tomorrow, living without anything that they were used to. Remember, Egypt was a fastidious land. Egypt was a land where even though they were slaves, they had their own cattle, they had their own sheep, they lived in their own homes, their own houses. This is not a normal type of slavery that you think of when you think of slavery. Yes, it was difficult, and yeah, the work was backbreaking, and yeah, they did things to turn us around, but it was still a civilized land. It's different going from a house to a tent. And my proof is, just try it. And if you've never been camping before, you've already proved my point. You never do it because it's crazy. This is the concept of Rameir Shapiro. Once we had the mysterious nefesh of the fire by Avram Avinu, and of the water by Kriyas Yamsuf, and of the Midbar for Klal Yisrael, once we had those three, we were able to take on Torah for ourselves and never leave it ever again. We're willing to be Moser Nefesh for anything. That's the Medrash. The Medrash is talking about fire, water, and Midbar. That's how we accept the Torah. That's where we get our Mesiris Nefesh for Torah. Such a great concept from Ramir Shapiro. So again, look forward in Lukutip Shasim. I'm sure it'll be there. Not this year, for sure, next year. There's no question. Maybe only because Shavuos is going to be added on. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says another pshat over here, that since Torah is referring to fire, it protects anyone who learns it. And he's really quoting a Gemara Chagiga in Kav Zayin at the very, very end. Kal v'chomer mi salamandra. Apparently there's this creature, which is probably not a salamander, that is impervious to fire, that has a skin or some secretion that it secretes from its skin that allows for it to be able to survive in fire. We don't know what this is. We have no idea. The only reference that we see to it in the Midrashim is that Chizkiah, whose mother smeared all this salamander blood all over, salamandra blood all over him, so that when he did get thrown into a fire of Molech by his father Ahaz, he survived because he was totally impervious to fire, which makes him really good as a firefighter later on in life. I don't know if it ever went away, right? He always had that little thing all over his body, but the salamandra is there, and the Kal v'chomer, if the salamandra survives, then Kol Shekein, a Talmid Chacham who learns Torah all day long, has the protection that's helping him survive everything that's there. Talmid Chachamim are unaffected by the fires of Gehinnom. Why? The fires of Gehinnom can't affect him because he learns Torah. And the fire of Torah protects him from anything that the fires of Gehinnom might be able to get him on. The Chiddush HaRim is quoted as having been said. Now, he's quoted by the Pardes Yosef. Says the following: anyone who kills themselves over Divrei Torah, who is willing to, that literally, I don't want to say willing to die over Divrei Torah, that's not what I mean. He's dying over Divrei Torah. Like Rava in the Gemara on Pei Zayin on the base, Pei Ches in Shabbos, where he's sitting on his fingers and he's making them bleed. And the non-Jew that sees him comes up to him and says, I'm a Paziza, I die Pazizaihu. You're an impetuous nation. You don't know what you're into. Look at you. You're making yourself bleed over the Torah. What's wrong with you? And Chava said a crazy, crazy little line back to him. He said, the concept of, if not for this, who would I be? I would be a nobody. That's the line basically that Rav was giving back, the Rav Yosef type of line. Says the Chiddush HaRim, if that person learns Torah in such a way, his body is Kulo Torah. If he's Kulo Torah, that means he's made of fire, because Torah is an Aish. Torah is a fire. If so, fire cannot affect that body. And he can survive any fire that other put him into. Now, obviously, there have been Talmidei Chachamim that have died by fire. Rabbi Hananya ben Tradyum would be a good example in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Ches. But that's what he says. He says that concept. And whatever that means, that a Talmid Chacham cannot be affected by fire, however you want to translate that Gemara in Chagiga, that the Chiddush HaRim is taking as saying that this is pshat, that a Talmid Chacham that's filled with fire cannot be affected by fire, that's the idea behind it. So let's finish off with some stories over here. One of the lessons that we can take from this parsha, from this entire idea, is that even if you're a great Talmid Chacham, you cannot be too far from Torah at any point. That the Torah needs to be with you wherever you go. It has to go with you into the desert, so to speak. Wherever you go into the desert. The Divrei Chaim of Sons, okay, the Divrei Chaim of Sons is the first Sons of Rebbe. The first Sons of Rebbe is the Reb Chaim. Right in the Sefer Eish Das. He says that one cannot read kvitzlach, you know, the little kvitzels that people give to the rebbes. You can't read it without having a yesod of Torah beforehand, without being fully immersed in Torah beforehand. You can't help your chassidim at all without that power of learning. Where did he learn that from? Divrei Chaim says, I got it from the Chozeh Milublin. What happened? When he was 10 years old, the Divrei Chaim wanted to go to the Chozeh Milublin. He heard about the powers of the Chozeh Milublin and how great he was. So he told his father, I want to go to the Chozeh. So his father agreed. His father was maskim. And he took the Divrei Chaim to go see him. And he brought him in. And he was 10 years old at the time. He's a little kid. He's sitting in the room. He's watching the Chozeh Milublin the entire time. The Chozeh Milublin, eventually, after reading Kvitlach, going all the way through, he said, all right, I need everybody out of my room. Everybody out. The Shamash quickly hurried everybody out, but the Divrei Chaim was just, nobody saw him. He was sitting behind the chair, right? And the Divrei Chaim wasn't sitting, and Chozeh Milublin wasn't sitting down. He was standing behind the chair, he was a little kid, and everybody missed him. So everybody got out of the room and they closed the door afterward. And the Divrei Chaim is standing right behind the chair, and he's just like, I'm staying. Right? So the Chozer Milublin starts pacing the room and starts reciting Mishnayos to himself. Same Mishnayos. One Mishnah after the other, after the other Mishnah to himself. He's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then he goes back to his chair, and he's ready to call everybody back in. And he turns and he sees the Divrei Chaim, this 10-year-old boy, sitting behind the chair. So one could say maybe the Chozer Milublin, he was called the visionary. So the Chozer was able to see that the Divrei Chaim was going to be a great gadol someday. Who knows what he ended up doing, but he didn't slap him. Right, that would be a classic ending. And he slapped him and he told him to get out. That's not it. He went up to him and he said, when a person reads Kvitzelach, and a person wants to try to give advice, and a person is trying to give over to other people, there is no choice but to learn Torah. I can't get anything out of the Kvitzelach without learning a bit. In the middle of while I was doing everything with all my chassidim coming in and asking me this and asking me that or whatever it is, I felt myself getting weak. And I knew the reason why I'm getting weak is because I don't have enough Torah in me. So I needed to kick them all out, build myself up in Torah, and now I can bring them back in and read the Kvitzelach again. And that's what he was able to do. You know what I found the most amazing part of that story? He wasn't learning Kabbalah. He's learning Mishnayos. Just Mishnayos. I don't mean to say that the just is with the little air quotes over here. He just learned Mishnayos. It's not like, so the Divrei Chaim finished the Zohar three times. That's not what he did. The Chozer Milublin sat down, walked back and forth, reciting Mishnayos. That's it. That's all he did. Most cab drivers can do the exact same thing. Right? That's the concept. To be able to go through and just a little bit of learning, you can reconnect to the Torah that you're involved with. In a way, even nowadays we have this type of kedusha, that the Torah that you have is the ability to make decisions that you wouldn't have made otherwise. And as an example, Rav Zilberstein once received a shiloh from Brazil, from São Paulo. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. São Paulo? It's funny because I thought it was S-A-O, right? So it's funny because in the Sefer it was written as Samach Aleph Nun. And I was thinking to myself that he probably made a mistake and meant to write Sal as Samach Aleph Vav, but I was like, maybe there's another place, and I was too lazy to check it up on Google. So regardless, right, it was Sal Paulo. So this Shiloh came in, and here's the Shiloh, this is what ended up happening. A man and his wife were living happily. I know, that's what I'm thinking. So somebody probably originally wrote Samach Aleph Vav, and it was corrected by the editor. I would assume that's what it was, because they're not used to Sal. So either way, regardless, right? It is the same thing. I'm assuming it's the same thing as San. I'm assuming that's the reason why it's called that way. I have absolutely no idea. My Spanish is just not up to par. But my idea, yeah, maybe that's the reason why. But that's the idea. By the way, regardless, they were living happily. Everything was going well. And then the woman got up one day, and she said, I want to move to Eretz Yisrael. Sal said, no. I've got a nice business here. My whole family's here. Your whole family's here. I want to move to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to move to Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing there for me. I agree. Eretz Yisrael is great, and we should live there, but I've got so much here. I've got nothing there. What am I going to do? She said, nope. I want to live there. And she would tell anybody who asked her about it, she would say, how can we not live in Eretz Yisrael? She would bring psukim to prove that we should be living in Eretz Yisrael. She obviously didn't know Gemara, because, you know, but she would have brought the Gemara and Ksuvis, right? How you should go, etc. it is. And then she actually did it. Actually, she picked herself up and she said, you're either coming with me right now, right? Or I'm just leaving on my own. I'm leaving on my own. It had to be recent because Rabbi Yashiv was alive and Rabbi Zilberstein got the Shiloh. So let's say within the last 20 years, 25 years, right? Something like that. So she picked up and went. She went to Eretz Yisrael. She moved to Eretz Yisrael. So the husband was like, what in the world? He went back to Eretz Yisrael and was demanding from the Beis Din that they send her back. Either send her back, call her a Moredes. A Moredes is a rebellious woman. And that she should be divorced without a ksuva. She divorced without a ksuva or come back with them, whichever one it's going to be. So in this case, they had Paskin. This is a Gemara. If a woman wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, she can demand a get with her ksuva from her husband and live in Eretz Yisrael. Right? So they said, okay, it looks like it's an open and shut case. So we're going to have to paskin that the woman gets to stay in Eretz Yisrael, gets her ksuva, and that's that. So he went to Rebbe Yashiv right before and just ask his opinion on the matter. What do you think? So he went to Rebbe Yashiv. Rebbe Yashiv says, who says she wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael because she feels it's kadosh? So they said, like, but that's what she's saying. She's claiming she wants to be here because of the land of Eretz Yisrael. She wants to be here for that reason. He said, it's possible. But that's how he ended. It's possible. So Rav Zilberstein looked into the matter a little bit further. Then he found out some weird stories. Apparently, this guy was a lot older than this woman. And there was some law, I don't know what it was exactly, and I can't tell you, and they didn't write it down inside there. There was a law that for whatever reason, she was unable to inherit money from her husband after he died, unless she was out of the country at the time of his death. That was the law. So she came up with the whole thing of wanting to move to Eretz Yisrael in order to be in Eretz Yisrael on the off chance that her husband would die. And in that sense, she would be there for that reason. In that case, I would assume so. I would assume so. Whatever it was, clearly this was not the idyllic, again, it was not the happy atmosphere that they made it out to be in the very, very beginning. But they found out that there wasn't the reason. Now, the Gemara is talking about, and the Mishnah says that you're allowed to do that if you want to go to Eretz Yisrael for the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. That's what it's there for. And Rav Yisrael Zilberstein found out that she didn't care about the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. That wasn't what she was looking for. She wasn't trying to be in the part. That's not why she was there. She was there only because her husband. She admitted to it. She said that that's the reason why she was there, once she was confronted with the issue. Rav Zilberstein Paskin, that she either had to go back or she was considered a Moredis and she had to leave. She ended up going back to Brazil. I don't know what happened. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he never died. I have absolutely no idea. Let's hope it's a really happy ending. And she made billions of dollars in the lottery and everybody's all happy. And it wasn't about the money, obviously. It was only clearly about something else. But that's part of the bracha of learning Torah. You get to ask the right questions. Something you wouldn't even ask. Something you wouldn't even know. Who would have known? Who would have thought to ask such a question? There's some crazy case like that. I can give you a story of Rav Chaim Kanievsky after a story of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, which is these crazy lines that he said. Well, he actually said the same basic things, but these crazy lines that just don't make any sense to say. But they were said, and then something happened because of it. Just something unbelievable happened. Again, to Siyata Dishmaya. It's not like, well, they're Nevi'im and they're prophets. They're not prophets. But Siyata Dishmaya allows you to say the right thing at the right time because that's what Torah does. We'll end up with this. Rav Chaim Volozhin, remember, is the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, started the yeshiva system that we have today. So you have him to thank, or him to, hey, depending on how your yeshiva system went. But either way, regardless, Rav Chaim Volozhin started off and went through everything, and did everything that he had, that we have today. So Rav Chaim Volozhin had a bunch of Talmidim that wanted to go visit. Now, I'm not positive I'm getting the word correct. There is no Hasidus like this today. Lechovich or Lefkovich, I don't know what it is. But Lechovich, they wanted to go see the Rebbe of Lechovich, who is doing these crazy miracles, crazy nisim, and tishin, and doing these unbelievable things. So all the Talmidim wanted to go. Rav Chaim Volozhin kept telling them, don't go, don't go, don't go. Just sit and learn. You don't have to go. It'll be perfectly fine. But one time, these Talmidim decided they were going. They went for Shabbos, right? They left on a Thursday, whatever it is. They went by train. They got there, and they came back, and they were going. They were on their way from the train station, right, I guess what it was, to whatever it is, and who comes into the wagon that they're taking from one train station to the next? But Rav Chaim Volozhin. Rav Chaim Volozhin happened to be stopping off. Somebody had told him that this wagon was going to Volozhin. So he said, oh, I'll go in. He went in and saw his Talmidim. Took one look at them. They were shocked, white-faced, and he knew immediately they had gone to Lechovich. He knew. He realized that they must have gone to the Rebbe. So he said, okay. He turned to them and he smiled, a great big smile, and he said, what did you see in Lechovich? What did you see by the Rebbe? So he said, Rebbe, you won't believe it. We saw this, and then he did that, and he did all this, and that, and the other. All these crazy things. How could he have known? It makes no sense. How did he know it? So Chaim Volozhin said, what's the problem? He said, you want to know what's going on in my house right now? I'll tell you what's going on in my house right now. And he went and he told them what's going on in his house. According to the story, what was happening is that his wife was beating up his kid. I'm assuming that's just a mistake. The story is that the kid sat down in Rav Chaim Volozhin's chair, so his wife was beating him up. So maybe it just means that he was giving a little patch and saying like that. Anyway, yeah, full body slam. Yeah, full body. Let's assume that. But either way, regardless, that was an unnecessary part of the story. So he said, that's what's happening right now. So the Talmidim wrote down the time. They ran to Volozhin, you know, when they got to Volozhin, they ran over to Rechaim's house before Rechaim could get there. They ran inside and said, what happened at this time of the day? And somebody was able to say, yeah, at that time, he had sit down in the chair and they wrote it down. So they said, oh, Rechaim Volozhin. So they went to Rechaim and they said, what's going on? Rechaim Volozhin said, you understand, with the power of Torah, you can see things that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. So when I want to see what I need to see in order to prove to you that I can do what the Rav of Lechovich could do, so I'll do it. But I don't like doing it. Because why bother? Just sit and learn Torah. That's what Rav Chaim did. Now, I can't tell you too many stories like that. And I haven't been zilka to that yet. I could say right now, I could tell you what's going on in my house right now. My wife is cooking.
3 of my kids are sleeping, right? 2 of my kids are probably not doing their homework like they should be. And I'm not an uppie. I may have learned today, but I'm not an uppie. But I will just tell you, the concept of building yourself up in Torah, and then you won't need to get it from other people, that Siyata Deshmaya is there, is a true concept, no matter how you look at it. The concept is there, no matter how you do it. That's the idea over here. So what we did is we went through 2 basic midrashim. 1, that Bamidbar Sinai, you have to make yourself into a desert in order to learn Torah. And 2, that in order to get the Torah, you need Esh, Mayim, and Midbar. Those are the 3 ideas that you need in order to get the Torah itself. We'll end to that. Shkayach, everybody. Have a great Shabbat.